Near the northern cliff, the new festival ground had been built, a veritable city unto itself with tents and wagons, instead of buildings clustered inside the great security fence that crackled, even at this distance, with arcs of pale blue lightning. Past the tents and wagons, a great amphitheatre had been carved out of the ground. It was a perfect circle, insanely massive in scale, with 128 rows of seats from which the richest and most powerful people in the Republic would watch the contests of skill and strength on the fields in the middle. Veiled Lightning saw a running track, an archery range, and the pale white chalked outline of a handball square. Near the middle of the field, a large podium stood for the winners to receive the paladin bands they'd earned for their skill. And behind it, dead in the middle of the field, a steady red fire fountained from an enormous brazier set into the ground. She had missed the opening ceremony last night, a calculated move to avoid making the event more political than it already was. A private glamour screen on her airship had relayed what puppet shows across the Republic had displayed, however, a massive pageant of well-choreographed athleticism and flash. The paladins had leaped and danced with incredible skill, unmatched in so many who were so young. Veiled Lightning had never seen its like. She was a little unsure why most of the female paladins had been bouncing in such skimpy outfits, but perhaps it was a Republic thing. Veiled Lightning was a classic imperial beauty, her face pale but touched with gold, where light caught the delicate angles of her brow and cheekbones. Her hair was intricately bound, with two long braids running down either side of her throat and past her bosom. She wore a gown of shimmering red silk, and the nine-ringed dragon, legendary blade of the imperial family, rode at her waist. She rested one hand upon the nine-ringed dragon as she frowned at the amphitheatre.
"I hear they constructed this in only a few weeks."
General Jade Blossom snorted beside her. She was an older woman whose armour, though enamelled black and inlaid with precious stones in the shape of a twining dragon, clanked when she moved with the sound of grim functionality.
"Brute work, carving all that out of the stone. Explains why it's as ugly as it is, then."
She raked fingers through short hair streaked with white.
"Any news from your contacts, Highness?"
Veiled Lightning sighed.
"No, General. The dragon requested the young man Ribandaris be given asylum, but followed only with silence. From our other friends, I have heard nothing at all."
Blossom glared at the approaching amphitheatre, as though she could wring answers from it through sheer force of will.
"This feels like a trap."
"It does. But if accepting the offer brings a chance for more lasting peace with the Republic, what choice do I have?"
The last time Veiled Lightning had been in the Republic, she'd been chasing Issa Fasira de Lockenville in an attempt to bring the woman to justice and avert a war. Instead, her efforts had brought that war even closer, and a blast from Heaven's Spire had nearly destroyed a good portion of both nations. The floating city hung low in the sky now, directly over Sunrise Canyon, the mirrors along its edges catching the morning light to direct it fully onto the glowing violet stones that held the city aloft.
"I will follow your lead, of course, Highness," Blossom said, with a grim disapproval that only a veteran could deliver.
Veiled Lightning wished, not for the first time, that Gentle Thunder were alive to offer her counsel. She had seen his mutilated body turned into a puppet for a weapon of the ancients, and then cut that body down to bring her mentor and guardian his final peace. She wondered what he would say.
"Issa Fasira, Locke will be here when the trap springs, whatever it may be."
Veiled Lightning smiled.
"When the time comes, hit whatever she hits."
"Sounds simple enough," Blossom grinned. "How long until we land?"
Veiled Lightning checked the paladin band that rode on her forearm, checking the built-in map and timer.
"It should not be long now."
"I don't even know why they have us patrolling this place any longer," said Matclar to the other guard beside him as they walked the outer grounds of the Archvoyant's palace.
"It's where the most important man in the Republic eats breakfast," said Ruck. "You want to explain why you stopped putting guards outside his bedroom?"
They crossed the outside edge of the hedge maze, the gently curving path carrying them past a lovely fountain of Tashaveth.
"Plus Archvoyant Savert as Urujar. You can't take guards away. It's going to look like a race thing.
The walls have aural shielding and the strongest security wards the Republic has ever seen," Matclar said.
"You hear about how that lock woman broke into the palace 6 months ago?" Ruck asked.
The exact details of this were both classified and hazy, but Ruck had been around for a while, and guards didn't stay around for a while without hearing things.
"Heard she turned into a fish and swam in through the sewer pipes," Matt Clark said. "That's why we spent 2 weeks putting shapeshifter wards on all the grates."
"No, that was a fairy creature," Ruck said.
"Was she the one who shot an arrow with a rope tied to it over the wall and slid down that way?" Matt Clark asked. "Because we spent another 2 weeks lining the walls with crystal amplifiers to increase the height of the wards, and barrier wards to deflect arrows and whatnot that get fired in."
"No," Ruck said again. "I think that was some tinker with one of those trick bows." They crossed into the wooded garden behind the main ballroom.
"Well, how did this lock woman get in, then?" Matt Clark asked with some asperity.
"Front gate," Ruck said. "Tried to fake her way in during a party, got herself arrested, and then broke out of the cell."
"So she's why we spent 2 weeks installing double-locked doors with crystal aura locks in the cell areas," Matt Clark muttered.
"That's not the point." Ruck stopped and looked out at the garden, which was still shadowed by the flowering trees and the gentle morning light. He thought he'd seen movement at the edge, near one of the trees. It was probably just a swaying branch, but the garden was shady and cool, and nice to walk in, regardless.
"Well, what is your point, then?" Matt Clark asked,
following as Ruck strolled out toward the trees.
"You can't just install more wards and assume the criminals will give up."
Ruck looked through the trees and decided it had probably been nothing.
"Criminals want to get in as much as we want to keep them out, and they'll always try something new. You know what I mean?"
He looked behind one last tree, then turned. Matt Clark was on the ground, in front of the top half of an Urujar man, hovering in midair.
"Hey, he's going to wake up, I promise," said the Urujar man.
And Ruck had time to realize that the man's lower half was behind some sort of invisible wall. No, not a wall, the side of a ship, just barely visible as the light hit it, as he went for the blade at his waist.
"Arching ardour,"
Ruck said for some reason, instead of the shouted cry of alarm he had intended. And as everything went wavy and dark, the last thing he saw was the Urujar man, giving him an apologetic smile. Pyvik found the door, eased it open and stepped into the enormous room, lit by flickering runes on the floor and glowing crystals in the ceiling.
"I cannot believe they simply let you in," Dorenki said quietly behind him.
"I meet Savert twice a week. I'm not that big a security risk."
Pyvik scanned the room. The great chasm that yawned across half the floor was still dark, despite there being daylight below them. Not far from it, a waist-high ring of crystal was decked with panes that flickered and hummed luminously.
"This is where you fought the people trying to destroy the Republic?" Dorenki asked,
following as Pyvik went to the control console.
"This is the place. Archvoyant Bertram was locked into this console, spines of crystal growing right into his fingers."
Pyvik started working.
"You mean around them, sir?" Dorenki asked. "Into them. Couldn't tell if it was under the fingernail or right up through the pad."
"And you're comfortable using that console, then?"
Pyvik stopped and gave Dorenki a look.
"Unless you'd like to take over for me."
"Ah, no."
Dorenki stepped back, his fingers curling in discomfort.
"And you're certain you know how to redirect the transport rune as your companion requested?"
"Not even a little. But Tern and Desidora can, and they gave very specific instructions."
Pyvik finished pressing crystals, and the console lit up.
"Should be ready now."
The console began chiming.
"Supposed to do that, is it, sir?"
Dorenki asked with a little smile.
"I strongly suspect not," Pyvik said,
sighing and drawing his blade. Dorenki drew his as well.
"Can you at least determine whether it is alerting guards to come to our location, or to the location where Captain Locke and her friends will be transporting to the arena?"
"Let's find out."
Pyvik went to the door, opened it, saw a man in a black coat and a red paladin band reaching for the handle, and stabbed him through the throat.
"Good news, it's us."
Dorenki caught the guard as he fell and eased him to the ground.
"We're sorry,"
he said quietly to the man, who blinked in confusion as a life left his body. Dorenki shut the man's eyes.
"If we run, the guards may pursue us, but any competent security expert will check to see whether the transport rune is set to activate now." He looked up at Pyvek. They'll catch Locke. Pyvek had been thinking the same thing.
You draw them away. I'll get to Locke and buy her time.
Durenki smiled crookedly.
As soon as the alarm went off, sir, any chance of me escaping through the front gate vanished. At most, I'd be delaying my capture while hurting Locke's chances of reaching the ground and stopping these creatures.
He stood.
Now, if you'd like to stop trying to hog the glory and lead the way, sir.
Pyvek clapped him on the shoulder.
We get out of this alive. I'm retiring, and this job is yours.
Please, sir. I believe I already had enough to get you fired. They hit the hallway fast and quiet, blades ready.
Pyvek will be in the control room, Locke said to Desidora and Derry. If the gate to the Shadowlands isn't in there, you should at least be able to use the readings to figure out where it might be.
Desidora nodded.
We'll find it.
Are you sure you want me up here, Captain Locke? Derry asked. If most of the fighting is going to be down there.
That's the plan, Derry, Locke smiled. But you remember my plans, right? As Derry smiled and shook his head, Locke glanced at Desidora and added, Besides, she no longer has Gil's power, and while she can take care of herself magically, I'd feel better if she still had a hammer.
Derry raised a clenched fist to his heart.
I'll keep her safe, ma'am.
Desidora and Derry headed off down the hallway, and Locke and the others headed into the ballroom. Locke had fought a group of soul-shackled minions in that space once. For that matter, she'd punched out her sister in the garden where they'd landed the ship.
Place is weird when it's empty, Kale muttered beside her.
Better empty than full. Locke didn't look over. As he left the main ballroom and stepped into a side hallway, a servant carrying an armful of sheets stepped out. She saw them, opened her mouth, said,
Arching Ardor,
and fell over.
Laying it on a bit thick there, are you? Kale asked.
She still has her throat, Ilulenia said, with a grin that had a lot of teeth in it.
All right, fair point.
Breakfast room isn't far ahead, Locke said, and pointed down the hallway. We can activate the transport runes there.
The door to the breakfast room burst open, and a trio of black-coated paladins burst out, arms raised.
Blown!
Locke charged, her walking stick up, and behind her the others did the same. It was too far, and she knew it, but fleeing wouldn't get her to the transport runes. She dove to the ground as a blast of crimson energy cracked past her, and scrambled back to her feet as Ululenia, in the form of a shining white eagle, screeched past her and ripped into one of the paladins, tearing at his face with cruelly barbed claws. The last paladin aimed at Locke carefully as she got back to her feet, and she dove again, seeing even as she did that he was tracking her movement. Crimson energy cracked out. Icy leaped across Locke, catching her even before she hit the ground and pulling her away from the blast, and then twisted, taking a glancing blow that still put him down on the ground hard. A moment later, the paladin who had fired grunted in surprise, a crossbow bolt jutting from his chest. He stumbled and fell, holding onto the shaft, and Locke glanced back to see Tan, pale and grim, standing over Icy's body. Ululenia still had one of the paladins, and she was a bear now, ripping viciously at him as he screamed. The other aimed again at Locke, still too far away for her to reach him. Then Pyvek stepped through the doorway, and his blade took the paladin cleanly across the throat.
Probably want to hurry, he called.
I guessed. Locke turned, saw Kale getting Icy back to his feet, heard the sounds of combat coming from up ahead, and started running again as Pyvek turned and parried a blow from inside the room. A booted foot caught him in the chest, and he slammed back into the far wall, grunting. Another paladin stepped out, sneering, and Locke slid her blade from the walking stick and across his throat in one smooth motion. Inside, a Justicar Locke vaguely remembered from her brief tenure as one herself, stood with one hand pressed to his side, panting over the fallen form of another paladin. Durenki looked up as Locke came in.
Took you long enough.
Kale came in behind Locke with an arm slung over Icy's shoulder, half holding him upright.
More behind us.
Tern was supporting Icy on the other side. Ululenia flapped past them, a small white dove, and landed on the breakfast table, where she shimmered into a human shape, albeit with blood on her face and hands.
Fight or flee?
Flee.
Locke stepped to the breakfast table.
Pyvic! She pressed the little crystal inlay at the seat of the Archbuoyant, and the configuration turn had told her.
Derenki, come on!
Pyvic stepped to the doorway.
How long does it take? He called over his shoulder, still looking out into the hall.
About a minute.
Tern stepped past Locke and pressed the crystals.
Good. Everyone touch the table.
That includes you,
Locke called to Derenki and Pyvic.
We'll try, Pyvic said. Count us in.
Locke looked at Tern as the others stepped to the table and laid their hands on it.
I don't know, Tern said. I'm trying.
Through the doorway, Locke saw blasts of energy rip down the hallway. Pyvic and Derenki ducked back and then slashed out at enemies outside.
Tern, give me a time.
One hand on the table, Locke took a half step toward the door.
Give me a time, and I can help them and then pull back to.
I don't know,
Tern snapped, still looking at the table. Pyvic and Derenki slashed and stabbed. Locke heard metal tear through leather and grunts of pain. She saw a blade punch through Derenki's gut and out his back, and as Pyvic fell back from a blow, her hand came off the table.
Now!
Tern yelled, and Kale's hand clamped down over Locke's wrist. Locke saw Pyvic look to her, face taut with pain, before a blast of crimson slammed him to the ground, and then dazzling energy flared all around them, and they were gone.